Welcome to Diagram Dialogues, a podcast that explores the forces transforming healthcare across Asia-Pacific and the ways in which diagnostics is shaping this future. These episodes will feature leading voices, from innovators and changemakers to patient advocates who are dreaming of a better tomorrow and making it a reality. Hear how they are innovating diagnostics, shaping healthcare, and changing lives. Hi, and welcome to Diagram Dialogues. I'm your host, Jonathan Chan. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Su Ki Chi, a surgical oncologist based in Singapore. Dr. Su graduated with a degree in medicine from the University of Singapore. He did his surgical training in Sydney and then had his fellowship training in surgical oncology and head and neck surgery in London and New York. In 1917, Dr. Su became the founding director of the National Cancer Center in Singapore and was in that position for 20 years. Today, Dr. Su has his own surgical practice in Farrer Park Hospital and Farrer Park Medical Center with an interest in surgical oncology and head and neck surgery. In this episode, he shares with us about his perspective on the role of digital tools in reshaping cancer care. Dr. Su, welcome to the podcast, and I want to start off our conversation with this. How are digital tools playing a role in digitalized healthcare?
Digital tools are very useful for at least four reasons. The first is obviously we have information on tap for the physicians. Because of the availability of internet, PubMed and other sites, we can get instantaneous information. And this is in marked contrast to previously where we had to go to the library to hunt for textbooks and medical journals. It's especially useful because for a busy clinician, you have access to information, for example, on rare conditions well beforehand, so that when the patient turns up, there's already sufficient information that the doctor is familiar with for a particular rare condition, rather than to have to say to a patient that let me read the textbooks and come back to you in a week's time. So that's one useful digital tool. It is so important because patients do have the same access to the information, except they may not understand the context in which the information is written. And the doctors naturally add a greater breadth and depth to the understanding of any particular condition. It's also especially useful because medical progress is so rapid that, you can never be really on top of all the latest information except through the digital tool. That's one important aspect, this information on tap. The second is obviously as more and more information is accumulated, and this is especially so in oncology, then there is a great role for artificial intelligence in terms of the management of patients. And we are starting to see that with various platforms that are now available that will give us such tools. And this will eventually be of great help to patients. It's a very new and evolving field, but I suspect that in the next 10 to 15 years, this artificial intelligence contribution to medicine will become so very important. This is especially so because with the explosion of medical sciences, there are so many variables, and within a single doctor, I don't think he has the capacity to grasp the full implications of all the information that's out there, and the artificial intelligence tools which combines the latest in medical science with patient data, with clinical observations, will make a big progress in terms of care for the patient. So in some ways, therefore, medical information complements all the massive efforts in research in medical sciences, because it's able to collate all this and with the input of clinical data, contextualize again and place the discoveries appropriately. That is provided the doctors help contribute the clinical information in an accurate and timely manner. The third role of digital technology is obviously in medical imaging. And you know that especially in the practice of oncology, the ability to image not just the anatomical configuration of tumors, but also the physiological changes
that are taking place during the process of treatment becomes very important. And the digital enhancements that come with modern technology will allow us to be able to treat patients much better with this ability to visualize the anatomical as well as the biochemical physiological changes. A fourth contribution of digital technology is soon enough the impact of 3D painting, because I think we're not there yet, but clearly in the field of, say, joint replacement surgery, you can create very, very accurate patient-specific joints to help the patients. But I think 3D painting will move to a point where, with parallel development in stem cell biology and development, we can start to create the semblance of organs, and the 3D technology will paint the scaffolding, the vasculature of the organs, and then holds up, I suspect, high hopes for organ replacement as a great advance in medical science, you see. And that will be quite spectacular if it can be done, especially because, as you know, transplantation requires organs, and organs are in a huge short supply. So many parallel strands are coming together.
And do you foresee a future in which 3D printing has a role in cancer care?
It will, because the big limitation for cancer care is always how do we remove the cancer without extensively mutilating the patient. Many tumors are inoperable, not because technically we cannot take them out, but it's just that if we take them out, we cannot replace them with an critical organ. So if there's a chance for organs to be critically created through 3D technology, and then the surgical field advances considerably. For example, a massive tumor, that if you take out the whole liver, you do need to have a liver transplant. And patients with cancers, they're not a priority on the transplantation list unless you can create your own liver.
Dr. Su, you've painted a pretty promising picture of the future of healthcare, but what challenges do we have today that we need to overcome for digital tools?
Digital tool is useful, for example, in the tumor box. This Navify Roche platform for tumor box is especially useful. Different groups of doctors can come together through the platform and efficiently contribute their inputs into the platform so that tumor board becomes more seamless. Less effort is required and less time is required for the individual doctors.
Tell me more about the tumor boards, because in the past there had to be meetings where data had to be collected and exchanged manually. And now we have these digital tools to help us, but what was the process like back then?
This is a very fundamental concept of oncology or the management of patients, you see. And in a way, if you look at the evolution of cancer care, it started with surgery as the mainstay. And then at the turn of the 20th century, the Curies came along and invented x-rays. And soon enough, the second cornerstone of cancer care was radiation then. And then we evolved into creating drugs, chemotherapy drugs for treating cancers. The first two modalities of treatment were treating really local regional disease. And then chemotherapy came along and it addressed the issue of what we call systemic disease. In other words, if cancer has moved beyond its local boundaries and its draining lymph node boundaries, then obviously just doing extensive surgery or giving radiation in an extensive manner doesn't help, because it's disseminated all over. See, so chemotherapy became useful in that context. Then we moved to genomic medicine as the fourth step in the management of cancer care, where understanding the mutational changes in tumors, we are able to set organize drugs that block these mutations, mm-hmm. and then you have this concept of targeted therapy for cancer care. And now we are moving into the field of immunotherapy, where we are harnessing our immune system and complementing the immune system to cope with what is clearly a very foreign entity within our body and yet so well tolerated, because tumors are very smart. So there are five strands to cancer care now. For a patient, there is a need to be able to decide in a rational manner which to use, which combination to use, and in what order. And so therefore, tumor boards become especially important, because you would expect that in such a tumor board, in all these areas, and then we will discuss for that particular patient, as I said, what modality to choose, what combination, in what order, and when tumor fails after initial treatment, what is the logically the next line of treatment to offer. With that, therefore, patient gets the best care available, because it concentrates the mind of all the doctors on one particular patient.
How long ago would you say in Singapore we start seeing the emergence of tumor boards?
We started tumor boards at the National Cancer Center, and prior to the National Cancer in Singapore General Hospital, more than 30 years ago. In terms of countries in Asia Pacific, so tumor boards provide patients with the best available expertise in one concentrated hour. So it helps to protect the patients, because patients are especially vulnerable, especially when they're told that they have cancer. And they're desperate, and doctors who are less than professional can push an agenda, and desperate patients buy for one of knowing better. Whereas in a tumor board, you have different groups of professionals all keeping each other on their toes and on the edge. And so therefore, it provides patients with the best protection against less than ethical practice. The third benefit of tumor board like that is that you educate the doctors too. See, each of the specialists know a lot of their field, but less of other people's skills. And when you come together to discuss a problem and perspectives are given from other fields, obviously this is a very powerful educational exercise for all the doctors concerned. See. And then fourthly, tumor boards are useful because, and especially if there's a significant AI component in the tumor board platform, then doctors can be provided with the latest on the advances in medicine and the clinical trials that are available. To say, for example, what Navify Roche platform is doing with information on all the trials. And in that way, do patients good too, you see. So a cornerstone of cancer care now surely has to be tumor board, if anything, for the betterment of the patients, for the protection of the patients.
So how long were those tumor board meetings back then? Were they also about an hour or so? Because I assume back then there were less patients than the numbers we see today.
We soon enough, within the National Cancer Center, for example, we would divide into about 15 different tumor boards then, because rather than dealing with all cancers, respective subspecialists would meet and have, for example, a head and neck tumor board, a breast tumor board, a gastrointestinal tumor board, a gyne tumor board. So with that, then the tumor boards, which otherwise can go on if you're dealing with every part of the body, is broken down into 15 separate meetings, each of which can go on for an hour and a half each week.
So in that hour and a half each week, how many patients is the board reviewing?
Ideally, it should be about 5 or 6, but often, especially if you are in a cancer center, then you see a lot more. And the bigger the number, the less quality time in terms of discussion. To a certain extent. Equally, too small a number is meaningless too.
In terms of challenges, do you feel like there are challenges in which digital tools have not been able to address so far?
Yeah, there are many useful digital tools. It is the effort that the individual physicians have to put in to learn to use the tools and then to use it in meaningful ways. So in to a large extent, therefore, it depends on the physician's commitment to wanting to use the tools for providing better care. So, for example, in the tumor board that we have in this hospital now, I have to invest a lot of time to write up the cases to be presented and then to coordinate with the pathologists, the radiologists, and other oncologists.
So when you're developing these cases for sharing with other doctors in meetings for the purposes of the tumor board, thinking about the patient data aspect of the issue, especially given the recent cases of data breach and security concerns, how do you think digital tools can actually provide a solution to the problem?
Well, obviously you can have digital tools that can collect patients' information, but yet anonymize the patient's data, and that would be especially useful. Someone has to hold the key to the anonymization, because, you know, tumor boards are not just for the edification of patients and doctors, but in a way it provides not only protection for the patients, but protection for the doctors, see? So that if there's any medical legal challenge to patient management, it would be very powerful if you have got tumor board documentation of the discussion and how the patient's case was not decided necessarily by one, but that there was a consensus of maybe 7-8 others' expertise. So then it provides the protection to the oncologist who's managing the patients. And therefore, that needs to be traceable. So you can anonymize, but it's still someone can hold the key that we can trace back, afford the protection that often doctors do require.
So in the current setup, who holds the key?
We haven't anonymized it yet. We anonymize in that the patient's names, we just use the initials, not the full name. You see. There's a limit to anonymization. Medical records need to be traceable for the treatment of the patients. Anonymization is important if third parties want to get hold of it, for example, for scientific studies, for conduct of clinical trials. But for the day-to-day management of patients, patient identification is the most important thing. So we are very exacting. Anonymization is not the way to go for patient management. It is patient identification.
And I'm also reminded of digital pathology. As a digital tool, do you feel like it's helping pathologists who are part of the tumor board?
Yeah, it's useful, but not in the way that you think of. Of course, it provides much greater ease to the pathologists. But really, if you look at cancer as a global problem, one of the biggest shortages is availability of good pathologists. That's one. And second is that very often, pathologists are diverted at looking at so many normal specimens. We're not sure whether it's normal, but eventually it turns out to be normal. So digital tool becomes very important because you can have digital pathology with the computer and artificial intelligence screening out all the normal ones, hence saving pathologists a lot of time. And what they then need to do is to look at once identified as abnormal by the pathologist, by the computer and by artificial intelligence. So that's a big plus. You take away the mundaneness of pathologists. They do more value-added tasks. The second, obviously, is digital pathology becomes useful for underdeveloped countries, because what you then need would be collecting centers for pathological specimens. But through digital pathology, you can have both the computers and the pathologists reading it, and therefore, suddenly, the level of healthcare improves dramatically because you now have access to pathologists where you never had before.
Dr. Su, thank you for your time. And that is the end of this episode. Thanks for tuning in. To find out more about Roche Diagnostics and Diagram Dialogues, please visit rochediagram.com. Stay tuned for the next episode.